read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Hold them in your hand and go hippity hoppity clippity cloppity off to a different land.
Welcome back to the Roundtable, 11:13 on your Tuesday morning. Phil Lewis has been the owner-operator of the Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont since 2015 and entered our Book Picks rotation shortly thereafter. He joins us now with another great list. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
In all these years, I don't think we've ever done this show together.
We haven't, no.
Your accent does not seem Vermont.
No, it's a mixture. My accent is part British and part Australian. But since moving to Vermont, it's shifted to be more British.
What did you do prior to 2015 when you took over the Bennington Bookshop?
I worked at Appalachian State University in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I worked with high school students in a Gear Up program, encouraging them to apply to and go to university.
What brought you to the world of books?
My wife's long-time dream was to own a bookshop, and I've always read books and enjoyed books, and it seemed like a good dream. So when the Bennington Bookshop came up for sale, we jumped at it.
Are you enjoying the dream?
Yes.
What did you bring for us today?
Okay, I've got a series of books. The first one is State of the Union, A Marriage in 10 Parts by Nick Hornby. Mm-hmm. Tom and Louise's marriage is falling apart. There's no passion left. Boredom has crept in, and infidelity has been admitted. In a last-ditch attempt to save their failing marriage, they agree to go to couples therapy. Before their first session, they meet in a pub across the road, as you do, across the road from the therapist's office.
Right.
Over a drink or two, they talk about their relationship, their children, and how they got to this point in their marriage. My agenda is, why did you sleep with someone else? One of them asks. To answer that question, I suspect we have to answer a lot of others, the other replies. Tom likens their marriage to a computer. He's afraid that if they take it to pieces to examine the different parts, they might not be able to put it all back together again.
So it's not a comedy, then?
It's very amusing.
Is it?
It is, yes. I really enjoyed this book. But, yep, I'll get to that bit in just a moment.
All right, sir.
They go back and forth for a while, finish their drinks, and cross the road for the first meeting with Kenyon, the therapist. Tom is nervous and suggests they go for a short walk to talk things over a little more. And then he bolts and disappears from view. Over the next few weeks, we learn a lot about Tom and Louise. We never actually enter the therapist's office, but in their pre-session meetings in the pub each week, we do get a sense of what transpired during this previous session. State of the Union is a fun read. The dialogue is witty and clever. Hornby is a compassionate writer. He treats his characters with love and respect. Tom and Louise's observations of themselves, each other, and the couples who visit Kenyon before and after their session are spot on. It's just a small book, a couple of hours reading on a rainy afternoon, but it packs a wealth of insight into modern marriage. The book has been made into a Sundance TV series, each of the 10 episodes, just 10 minutes long.
Hmm.
Have you read it?
I have not, sir.
No.
State of the Union, A Marriage in 10 Parts by Nick Hornby. And that gets your thumbs up, I guess.
It does. Okay.
All right.
And the next one is the first of three quirky but fun novels I'm reviewing this time. And this one is called How Not to Die Alone by Richard Roper. Andrew has an unusual job with the local council. He searches the homes of people who have died alone to try and find any trace of their next of kin. He takes his job seriously, and when he fails to find any relatives of the deceased, he attends their funerals himself as a mark of respect. Often, he's the only person there. Andrew is very much a loner. He barely tolerates his colleagues and goes home each night to an empty flat. He finds solace in his model trains and a small group of like-minded train enthusiasts who meet in an online chat room each night. There's Broad Gauge Jim, Tinker Al, and Bam Bam 67. After Andrew sets his model trains in motion on the tracks that loop around his apartment, puts Ella Fitzgerald on the stereo, and logs into the chat room, he can finally unwind. This is when everything comes together. This is everything, he thinks. Then Andrew is assigned to work with Peggy, a new employee at the council. For the first time in years, he feels a spark of joy, of life, of love. It's crunch time for Andrew. Everyone at work believes he's happily married to a beautiful woman and they have two wonderful children. What started as a simple misunderstanding years ago has grown into a complicated web of stories and taken on a life of its own. Things are brought to a head when Andrew's boss decides the office needs to do some team building and organizes a roster of dinner parties. How can Andrew explain the absence of a wife, two missing children, and an apartment filled with model trains? You know, it's fun. In desperation, he turns to his online support group, the train enthusiasts, to help him add one last hilarious scene to his alternative life before everything crumbles and he's faced with reality.
That would be a fine film, I'll tell you that.
Oh, it's a delightful novel. It really is fun.
Phil Lewis is here from the Bennington Bookshop. He is sharing his book list for today. That was How Not to Die Alone by Richard Roper.
Okay. And then the next one is The Guest Book by Sarah Blake. Okay, this is The Guest Book documents the lives of three generations of the Milton family, powerful New York, England blue bloods that trace their roots back to the Mayflower. Theirs is a family built on the tradition where things are better left unsaid so that no one rocks the boat. But there are secrets and sadness within the family. It's 1935. Like his father and grandfather before him, Ogden Milton is president of Milton, Higginson & Company, a private investment bank. He's in Germany negotiating a deal with a German steelmaker when news of the death of one of his sons reaches him. Following this tragic accident, his wife, Kitty, withdraws into herself. In an effort to rekindle their lives together, Ogden takes Kitty on a trip to Maine. They purchase an island, Crockett's Island, and make it their summer home. The guest book of the title refers to the record the Miltons keep of all the visitors to the island. People like them, privileged and powerful and Protestant. But the record stops abruptly one day, the last name entered, Len Levy. And what's the meaning of the old photograph torn in half with the unfinished sentence, "The morning of," written on the back? Sarah Blake has written a powerful novel that explores the themes of race, class, and family. The writing is superb, deftly conjuring up the island in Maine and the beautiful home where the Miltons spend their summers. The chapters switch back and forth between the different generations as Blake carefully peels away the layers that make up the family's history, revealing the nuanced rituals of family life and the stresses and strains that underlie outward appearances. It's beautifully done.
That's The Guest Book by Sarah Blake. Phil Lewis is our guest. The books you have picked all seem to be very personal. In other words, on a small level, personal. At this time of year, so many books are out. Are these the books that call you?
I've enjoyed each of these books for different reasons. And, you know, I probably read... I read almost a book a day, and so I'm picking a short list.
So your wife's minding the shop then?
That's right. Yes. No, I get up quite early in the morning and sit with some tea and read. But so this is the short list. I've read a much greater variety of books, but this is, yeah.
Well, what's next?
Okay, the next one is another of the quirky novels, and this is called The Lost Letters of William Wolfe by Helen Cullen. William Wolfe works as a letter detective at the Royal Mail's Dead Letter Depot in East London. His job is to decipher illegible addresses, add missing postcodes, reassemble damaged packages, and send the mail on its way. He's had a few memorable successes. There's the case of the ambergris, discovered by a schoolgirl on a beach and mailed to a museum, but somehow gone astray. William tracks down the intended recipient and redirects the package. Weeks later, he's thrilled to read in the newspaper that the young girl has received an award for her discovery. And then there's the Bravery Medal, addressed to Harry Prummell. William hand-delivers the long-lost medal and brings Harry closure on a tragic event from the Second World War. But he's experienced failure too. Once he dreamed of being a writer, but after months of writer's block and a squandered advance from his prospective publisher, which they're now demanding he repay, he has to extend his days at the depot and weather his wife Claire's anger at his deception and lack of ambition. Their marriage is drifting towards failure, it seems. One day, delving into his assigned sack of lost letters, he pulls a blue envelope from the stack. It's addressed to My Great Love and signed Winter. Winter writes to her soulmate, someone she is still to meet, but someone she is convinced she will bump into, just around the corner when she's least expecting it, at the bus stop or the opera, perhaps. William is fascinated. More of Winter's letters arrive, each with a few more hints about who Winter might be. She's from Dublin, where she lived above a bakery and frequented a pub called the Long Hall, but is living in London now. William is convinced Winter's letters are a personal call to him and pores over each line for clues. He becomes obsessed, and when one of Winter's letters announces the time and place of her wedding to her great love, he decides to attend. Well, I'll leave you hanging there. This is a lovely read.
You like it?
Yes.
How many books at this time of year do you have to sift through to curate your collection at Bennington Bookshop?
Well, this is a very busy time.
Right.
Right now to the end of the year is huge.
Yep.
And like most of the new releases come out on Tuesdays, which is today. So thankfully I'm not in the bookshop. We have two trolley loads of books to shelve today. So it's many, many, many books.
And do you know in advance if they'll make the cut? In other words, there has to be a large number of books that you will not put up.
We put everything we order, we actually put on the shelves, but some of the books get sent back because we don't sell them.
Mm.
But Linda, who is our buyer, my wife, works closely with the sales reps from the different publishing companies, and they've known the bookshop for years and years, and they know the kind of books that sell at the Bennington Bookshop. So we get a lot of guidance from them.
What is your next on the list?
Okay, my next is The River by Peter Heller. College friends Wynn and Jack set out to canoe down the Matsqua River in northern Canada. They anticipate days of hard paddling, with challenging rapids and the occasional portage, but also afternoons spent lazily fishing or collecting blueberries, and evenings reading by the campfire or just counting the stars. Early in their trip, they smell the acrid scent of a distant wildfire. But which way is it moving, and how quickly? Exposed on the river, they push themselves harder, hoping to reach a wider stretch of water where the chances of survival will be greater. But the fire isn't the only threat. There are other people on the river, too. There are the two Texans, armed with weapons and whiskey, and a man and a woman, Wynn and Jack, hear arguing in the darkness. The next morning, a canoe comes down the river towards their camp, a single man at the helm. Is this the man they heard shouting? If so, where is the woman? They head back up the river to look for the woman and find her with a serious head injury, close to death, and with no memory of what happened. What follows is a gripping story of survival in the wilds of nature. Heller's love for the wilderness comes through in his vivid description of the river. His depiction of water, of current and flow, is masterful, putting you right there with Wynn and Jack as they guide their canoe down the river. With a few deftly chosen words, he summons up the splash of sun on water at a certain time of day, the tug of a fish at the end of the line, and the power and awe of nature. The river, both a thriller and a wonderful meditation on the natural environment, is a very satisfying read.
All right. Phil Lewis is our guest. Phil, we only have about a minute left here. Can you summarize the last one on your list?
Okay, it's another quirky one. It's absolutely delightful. It's Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, and please read it. It's just joyful.
fun.
Fun. Just warm. Just touching.
How do people find out more about the Bennington Bookshop?
Okay, we've got an online website, www.benningtonbookshop.com.
Phil's list, each week's book pick list, as a matter of fact, all roundtable segments for that matter, all interviews, everything, are posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. And once again, to learn more about the Bennington Bookshop, you can find it online at benningtonbookshop.com. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.